Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
David Allen Holmes has supported independent tech news directly for 5 years. Be like David. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS.
This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, March 28th, 2019. In Los Angeles, I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
From the shores of Lake Merritt, I'm Justin Robert Young.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Roger was hanging out on the shores of Lake Merritt there for a second.
Yeah,
he was.
I wish. It's so nice.
I know.
We are going to discuss the report out of the UK on vulnerabilities in Huawei's networking gear. Always good to point out we're talking about Huawei's telecom networking gear. We're not talking about Huawei's phone. But let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Sony chairman Kazuo or Kaz Hirai has announced his retirement after stepping down as CEO a little more than a year ago, at the time passing the torch onto Kenichiro Yoshida. Hirai will leave his chairman role on June 18th, but will continue to act as an occasional senior advisor for the company when Sony wants him to.
Twitter announced Thursday it's expanding its dark mode options for iOS users. Twitter is now gaining a lights out option as well as an automatic dark mode in addition to its blue dark gray mode. Twitter previously called its dark theme night mode. It's now dubbed dark mode with some new icons as well.
Twitter a la mode. Apple released WatchOS 5.2, a free update that expands the availability of the electrocardiogram app to 19 European countries, as well as Hong Kong. The update also adds support for the second generation AirPods, letting them be used with the Apple Watch, and supports real-time text or RTT for phone calls. Let's talk a little bit more about something that confuses me about Skype.
CNET reports Skype users are seeing notifications that Cortana will no longer be supported in Skype after April 30th. That leaves Amazon Voice Services, which Skype announced back in November, as the sole option. Skype users have a link to their Amazon accounts to take advantage of that, and Twitter user Florian Boubois saw a offer for 200 free minutes on Skype for users who did connect their Amazon accounts.
So yeah, I'm with you, Tom. What in the heck?
Yeah. I mean, my take on this for a long time has been Microsoft is saying, look, Cortana is good at a lot of things. We'll use it for those, but we'll also open the platform to anybody who wants to play in our sandbox. And Amazon has been willing to play in that sandbox in ways that Google has not. But taking Cortana out of Skype seems to be more retreating, saying, well, Cortana's not good at that, which I got to be fair. I didn't use Cortana in Skype. So maybe that is something where like, hey, nobody's using it. Might as well reverse it. And you do have to take action if you want to use Amazon Voice. You have to go and link your Skype account. It's not just going to show up. It's not built in. Whereas Cortana was built in. So I don't know if this is more of a damnation of voice activation in Skype just isn't needed. And so for those who do, they'll take the action to link up Amazon and no need to complicate things and support Cortana, which is a new take for Skype. They've been trying to simplify after they made some wrong steps that the user base didn't really love. So maybe that's a good thing. I don't know.
Two options for you. Number one, they did want to streamline the app, and having two voice assistants for whatever reason, programming-wise, sure, became complicated. Or maybe this is a behind-the-scenes deal with Microsoft and Amazon, that Amazon says, hey, look, we would like our voice services to be the only voice assistant in this, and maybe increase its footprint for their voice assistants to be able to ring people up on stuff.
You think it's pay to not play?
I think it's, I mean, it might be. There's
I'll pay you for Cortana not to play there anymore.
Well, yeah, basically that it's, we've seen deals being done to keep certain search engines as defaults for browsers and stuff like that. This would be a similar version.
I'm going to call that low probability, but not no probability.
Spotify is testing a new subscription offering called Premium Duo for two people who live at the same address. Therein lies the rub. A single premium Spotify subscription costs €9.99 per subscriber, and a family plan for up to six people costs €14.99. The Premium Duo for two people splits that difference and costs €12.49. I don't know, whatever euro cents are. It also includes Duo Mix, an automatically generated playlist of music it thinks both members would enjoy. Premium Duo is being tested in Colombia, Chile, Denmark, Ireland, and Poland. And I, for one, as an Apple Music subscriber, am becoming to get a little bit jealous because Spotify has all these cool perks that are happening these days.
I agree with you. I'm not only am I an Apple Music subscriber, but I'm in a blended household with my wife being a Spotify user. And I don't know. There are times when we put on, you know, music on a Saturday or Sunday morning, and I wouldn't mind having an algorithmically selected double playlist that knows what we both like.
Yeah. I am a Google Play Music subscriber. My wife is a Spotify subscriber, and we meet with a family plan for Apple Music. So this could eliminate that, right? If I switched to be the family plan on Spotify, I am very curious what their algorithm would do to try to create a mix that would satisfy both of us. Because right now it's driver's choice in the car.
Yeah, it could be disastrous, but it could also be like, oh yeah, my wife does love this song. Here it is, even though I might not have put it on myself. So yeah, it definitely depends on how it rolls out, but it's gonna save you money. I think both of you might want to consider that as an option.
Well, certainly. And if I lived in Colombia, Chile, Denmark, Ireland, or Poland, I would get on this immediately. I am very excited to see it, because I'll say this. I like Apple Music. I liked it better when they got exclusives. It's been a little while since they had one of those exclusive albums that nobody else had for a week or so. Without that, I don't know how much better that product is compared to Spotify, because everyone I know that has Spotify seems to enjoy it.
I mean, honestly, and I pay more attention to streaming services maybe than the average person because I love them. They're the same. Yeah, there's some exclusives. Yeah, there's a little bit of a UI, you know, differentiation based on what OS you're using and that, this and that. But for the most part, they have all the same music. So it really comes down to the extra perks, which is, I think, goes back to this Spotify story is, okay, well, you know, when you're looking at two things that are more or less the same, you want to listen to your Ariana Grande album, but there's some other stuff going on there, then you end up going with a certain service.
Well, but that's also the thing, is that Spotify seems to be better at, I don't know what to listen to. What should I listen to? Boom. There's a million different ways to get you into it.
Sarah's saying, break up with your streaming service because you're bored. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development filed charges against Facebook for housing discrimination in its ad targeting system. HUD Secretary Ben Carson said in a statement, using a computer to limit a person's housing choices can be just as discriminatory as slamming a door in someone's face. In 2016, ProPublica reported that an ethnic affinities tool could be used by advertisers on Facebook to exclude Black or Hispanic users, among others, from seeing specific ads, which could violate federal law if it affected housing or employment information. Now, The Verge notes that the HUD complaint seems to take issue not just with that filtering, which Facebook has changed so that you can't do that anymore, but with ad optimization itself. HUD wrote in the complaint, Even if an advertiser tries to target an audience that broadly spans protected class groups, Facebook's ad delivery system will not show the ad to a diverse audience if the system considers users with particular characteristics most likely to engage with the ad. So they're describing the algorithm that says, okay, we've got your preferences, advertiser. Now we're going to use our algorithm to figure out who to show this ad to. And HUD is saying that is discriminatory, not just what the advertiser selected, but the way you're deciding to deliver the ads. Facebook told The Verge, Facebook told The Verge that it had been cooperating with HUD and trying to solve this, but said HUD insisted on access to sensitive information like user data without adequate safeguards. A little pot calling the kettle black there. HUD General Counsel Paul Compton told The Verge, just because a process to deliver advertising is opaque and complex doesn't mean that it exempts Facebook and others from our scrutiny and the law of the land.
This is a very interesting story. And I am personally tickled pink by the fact that Ben Carson is involved in it, because I find him to be a very very interesting and funny guy.
He's a doctor, moving on. Right? If, dentist? Is that right?
He's a doctor. Doctor. Okay. There's a movie that was made about his life starring Cuba Gooding Jr. Watch it. All right. This is a very, very interesting story in that there is a larger question about how biased an algorithm can be. And ultimately, what HUD is taking exception with is that it doesn't matter whether or not you are taking away these certain things that absolutely would discriminate. Mm-hmm. You are, by the process of selectively showing this to some people, discriminating. And I almost wonder whether or not either A, the HUD needs to take a look at their anti-discrimination laws and say, okay, well, we need to figure out a way to play in this ecosystem, or whether or not these kinds of advertisements will ever be able to be on a selective platform like Facebook.
The really interesting thing about this to me is we're talking about housing ads, right? We're not talking about all ads. We're saying, look, there are laws in the United States that say you can't advertise your house for sale only to certain ethnicities, or only to certain classes of people, or only to certain zip codes. And the rest of the time when you're advertising, it may be distasteful to say, hey, I only want to advertise this to a certain ethnicity. Or it may be that, like, you know, I don't want to spend money advertising this to an ethnicity that's not going to be interested in it, right? So there's shades of gray with other advertising. And Facebook has taken the position of, like, you know what, we're just going to eliminate a lot of these things, even if they're useful in some cases, because they're too often controversial. So they got rid of a lot of the ethnic targeting altogether. But in housing, they're still doing just normal ad optimization, which is, like, one of the cool things on the internet is we can figure out how to make your ad have the best punch. So only the people that are most likely to respond to it respond to it. And the law is saying, no, you shouldn't do that, because the most likely people to respond to a housing ad might not be the wide number of people that we need to see it. And there might be just that built-in unconscious bias into the algorithm. So you shouldn't do that. I think that's an interesting argument.
Plays into our conversation from yesterday, too, about how much should AI resemble a human mind and how much should the human mind be written right out of it. And I think in this case, it's a very gray area because, sure, if you look at data on a piece of paper, you kind of go like, oh, OK, I see where this might have gone. But we as humans say, but that's not appropriate.
Yeah. These are also about the laws as well. And I almost wonder whether or not there is a further conversation to be had about the HUD laws.
Well, whether, yeah, no, we're actually having our, that's a really good point. Our conversation is saying, this is the law. How do these algorithms pertain to it, given that that's the law?
Yeah. eBay is trying out a feature that uses computer vision to show similar items for sale. The example in their video is a green pair of sneakers. A prompt called "looks like this" will let you find other items that the AI deems similar. Could be the same item under varying names, or show in different shades. The feature is available for Android and iOS eBay apps in Australia, Germany, the UK, and US.
Took me a while to wrap my head around this one, because it's not just saying, hey, you like green sneakers. Would you like to see other green sneakers? Because that already exists on eBay. There's a, in that same drop-down menu, there'll be a thing that says green sneakers, and you can click on that. This is saying, hey, would you like to see things that look like this? They may not be called green sneakers. And I'm not sure sneakers is their best example, but the idea is like, I want, you know, things with yellow ducks in them, maybe. And so show me more things with yellow ducks and it'll show you more of those. Cause in their example, there's like, oh, maybe you want green sneakers, but they're not dark green like that one. They're lighter green or whatever, but they have the same style. It's a slightly different take on it. I can't tell if it's useful for me or not.
Yeah, me either. We were talking about this before the show and I was like, well, I mean, Amazon does a lot of this and eBay, as you mentioned, Tom does as well. But okay, if I really wanted to complete an outfit, and again, we're still using clothing as an example here, but I wanted, I don't know, gold shoes, which is something I always want. If I saw a photo of gold shoes and eBay gave me like 10 other photos that were kind of similar, or images rather, that were kind of similar, that could come in handy. I'm not sure how much it's going to come in handy for anything that's not about color coordination, but maybe I just haven't thought about this through.
No, I mean, I would say for collectors and stuff like that, if there's a specific thing that you want, you're trying to find, then finding different versions of it, cheaper versions, specifically in eBay, where there are a lot of people that, I mean, theoretically, many of the items are listed and then go away, sometimes permanently. So I think that there is a use for it. Ultimately, if people can find it and use it and they get worth out of it, then it is better for eBay. It costs eBay just the time and effort to develop these tools. And then whether or not the users use them, you know, that's a different story. But they want to provide as many tools, relevant tools as possible.
Yeah, our friend Patrick Norton bought a DeKalb corncob trophy off eBay many, many years ago. And I tried to look for one just out of curiosity one day, and trying to describe it was really difficult if I had a picture of it.
Yeah.
But there's a little chicken and egg there, because I would have had to find it to have the picture of it. But anyway, you know, I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is, if you're the person who says, yes, this is the feature I've been waiting for on eBay, please email us feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com.
All right. If this were April 1st, you might be forgiven for dismissing this next story, which is apparently a very real product and not a joke. The Fire Vase. It's a flower vase that you can throw toward a fire like a grenade in order to put that fire out. The Fire Vase was produced by a Samsung subsidiary called Chael Worldwide as a marketing effort. Chael is actually quite a large company. But the vase actually works using an outer chamber that's filled with potassium carbonate that cools and suppresses oxygen when the vase is smashed. And then a smaller inner chamber then holds the water for your flowers, because it's a vase. You know, before you smash it. Anyway, 100,000 fire vases were originally produced as part of a publicity campaign to promote the use of home fire extinguishers in South Korea. And apparently they've gotten popular enough that they're doing another round. Another 200,000 are on the way.
Audio listeners, please excuse my giggle. There is an amazing GIF along with this story that is as a man appropriate for opening day baseball season, just giving a right
very
down the middle.
Yeah,
just a two-seam fastball with this with this vase into a roaring fire that puts it out immediately.
Right. Yeah, conveniently, when there's a roaring fire in the middle of your living room, now when you have this vase, you can save your family.
Sarah and I went down a rabbit hole earlier when she discovered this story about Chael Worldwide, because the Verge story calls this Samsung. Chael is owned by Samsung, but Chael Worldwide is a marketing company. So this was meant to raise awareness about the importance and legal requirement to have a fire extinguisher in your house in Korea. Chael Worldwide did the opening and closing ceremonies of the 2018 Olympics. They do a lot of Samsung's events and announcements. They do a lot of marketing for a lot of other companies, and they also were engaged to you know, do a marketing campaign to raise awareness around fire extinguishers. This is pretty brilliant. I got to say, I want one of these.
So do I. And that, my friends, is a Steerike for fire.
It's funny. We all agreed, except Roger, who was like, I just have regular fire extinguishers in my home. And I was like, that too.
The best fire extinguisher is the closest one to you. And if you are able to throw one at a fire, it's not going to hurt.
My fire extinguisher, I have to press. I can't just toss it like a vase at a fire.
I mean, just picking up a flower, you know, a vase, and just smashing it against the wall. I mean,
it just looks so satisfying.
It does. I mean,
you break it off like a curve.
Yeah. There's an anxiety thing going on here.
Yeah. Folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com.
You're out of danger.
Tell you who's not out of danger of criticism is Huawei's networking equipment. Since 2010, an organization that acts independently of Huawei, called the Huawei Cybersecurity Evaluation Center, examines hardware and software deployed in UK telecoms provided by Huawei for vulnerabilities to sign off on it. And it generally does sign off on it and say, yeah, this is acceptable for use in the UK. In 2014, a board chaired by the National Cybersecurity Center in the UK, headed by Karen Martin, began overseeing the work. The board is made up of UK governmental representatives, Huawei company representatives, telecom representatives, and it's a way to say, okay, we're going to take the work that the HCSEC does and interpret it and provide an annual report. Now, last year's report raised some concerns over vulnerabilities, saying, you know, we found some holes, we found some things that ought to be patched, but did not find evidence of any state-sponsored espionage. Okay, we talked about that last year on the show and said, you know, this is a good thing. They're finding bugs. Now Huawei can go fix them. This year's report found, and I quote, serious and systematic defects, and slams Huawei for not doing enough to fix the vulnerabilities. In fact, a lot of times they found the same vulnerabilities they found last year. The report says that all the issues found relate to basic engineering competence and cybersecurity hygiene. And the NCSC, that's the National Cybersecurity Center, the oversight board, does not believe that the defects identified are a result of Chinese state interference. However, no material progress has been made by Huawei in the remediation of the issues reported last year. So to sum up, they're saying, we found a bunch of bugs. A bunch of them seem to be the same ones from last year that you don't seem to have made any progress fixing, but we're still not finding any evidence of any kind of state interference. However, the report does note that even with these bugs, there are architectural controls that networks can put in place that limit exploitation of network elements not explicitly exposed to the internet, and that those controls, along with good OPSEC or operational security, are critical to managing residual risks. So they're stopping short of saying these are so bad you shouldn't use them. They're saying you should know that there's some vulnerabilities in here. They can be managed. Which, you know, if you don't work in technology, that may sound crazy to you, but that's pretty much every device in technology has some vulnerability that you have to manage. Okay. The report says it will be difficult to appropriately risk manage future products in the context of UK deployments until Huawei's software engineering and cybersecurity processes are remediated. Essentially, they're saying, look, they didn't make any progress this year, so we're not going to promise that this isn't going to get worse, because there's no evidence that they're going to do anything to fix what's here, and more vulnerabilities are likely to crop up. Huawei promised to spend $2 billion fixing the bugs last year. The oversight board currently had not seen anything to give it confidence in Huawei's ability to bring about change via that transformation program. And the board said it would need sustained evidence of better software engineering and cybersecurity quality to change that assessment. So this report says, you're going to have to really show us something other than saying, yeah, we're still going to spend that $2 billion if we're going to change our assessment next year. Huawei, of course, once again promised to invest that money to improve its capabilities and says it takes the concerns in this report very seriously. Huawei even tried to say, hey, you know what? We're under closer security than any other telecom vendor out there. So that's good news. It means we're finding more stuff that can be fixed. Except this report says that they haven't been fixing it. So there we are, Justin. I mean, my summary of this was you get what you pay for. Huawei's equipment is cheaper, but it's also full of bugs, and it doesn't seem like Huawei wants to fix it. And so if you're considering using Huawei in your telecom infrastructure, that's the first thing you should consider is the quality of the software engineering and the hardware engineering.
Absolutely. Now, there's also the subtext here that Huawei has specifically come under fire in the United States as a possible backdoor for the People's Army of China and Australia. That hangs over kind of every Huawei story. The stakes here being that as we continue to move toward a more 5G for everything internet connected world, that this would be something that could be a major coup for China if, let's say theoretically, that there was some kind of vulnerability or backdoor. There is no evidence to say that that is the case here, but any Huawei story has that hanging, you know, around it, and it's part of the reason why we talk about it. That being said, I think that you hit the nail on the head. Maybe the argument shouldn't be, hey, Huawei is going to hand over literally every bit of data that we transmit to each other to the Chinese, but rather we shouldn't use Huawei because it's bad.
And to be fair, the report doesn't say it shouldn't be used.
No.
But it doesn't glow. It doesn't recommend this equipment as like, yeah, no, this is great. This is great stuff. Good bargains out there. And also, we're not getting the same level of scrutiny, Huawei's right, on Cisco equipment or Nokia equipment or Ericsson equipment, the whatever other brands of equipment are under consideration out there. But that said, you do take the information that you have into consideration here. And yes, 5G infrastructure is the infrastructure currently being built out. And so a lot of decisions made about infrastructure are being made now that will stick around for a few years. So folks want to make these considerations carefully. I look at this and I'm like, yeah, you can implement this safely. I'm sure it's not great, but I would think twice about it simply on the idea of I get what I pay for. Maybe I want to go with some other networking equipment, because I just don't see that the exploits are going to be as hard to defend against.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And like what happened, like 5 years from now, are we going to be looking back onto these stories and saying, they told us, they said it would happen, you know, we should have gone with a different company. I don't know the answer to that. But I mean, I think that's the worry, right? If it's banned, it's banned. If it's not, but there are strong warnings against, you know, a bunch of hardware and software stuff that lots of people are using, then, you know, it's sort of like, okay, well, what's the worst result that can happen down the road?
Well, because that's the other thing, is that you're not using it because you choose it as an end user, right? You're using it because that's what the infrastructure is built out on.
Yeah, and I think that's over exaggerated. Well, you're not really using it either. It's being used on the network level. You're more likely to be affected by a switch going bad or malware being put on your actual device than being affected by this.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But you have an interest in it, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not something that you get to choose, I guess, is my only...
That's always...
Something that people do get to choose is whether or not they want to be part of our subreddit. And the people who do have the most fun, you can submit stories and vote on others at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We're also on Facebook. Join our group there as well. Facebook.com/group/dailytechnewsshow.
All right. Let's take a look at the mailbag.
Let's do it. Sherry passed along some news plus archive advice because we were talking about what is the deal with archived magazines and do they not exist or do they? Sherry says, just listen to episode 3497. And towards the end of the show, you were talking about old magazine versions in News Plus. They were only available on day one. They were, but it took me a while to find them. If you search for the magazine you're interested in, it'll appear on the left sidebar. Then you select the magazine. Then on the right side, the issues will run along the top. You have to do a lot of search versus in the News Plus area, which only contains the recent issues. In conclusion, Sherry says, as a UX designer, I think Apple should reconsider how they created this interface. And Tom, we went through this before the show because we wanted to make sure that we understood what Sherry was saying. And it sounds like this is the iPad app, not the iOS app.
Yeah, what Sherry's describing where you have a sidebar is the iPad version of the News app.
Yeah.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
From Apple. If you go into the
iPhone app.
No, she's describing the iPad version of News Plus.
Right.
If you go into the iPhone version of News Plus, there is no search bar on the News Plus screen because there's no sidebar. You have to go into the following tab, which isn't clearly part of News Plus. But that's where your search tab is. Then if I search Wired Magazine and I click on tap on Wired, I will get recent issues and they will go back. Looks like they go back all the way to March of last year. So they give me a whole year's worth of archives. So there you go. You do have the archives in there. It's just not immediately obvious how to find them, but you can find them. And that's why I liked Sherry's last line of her email the best. I think Apple should reconsider how they created this interface because there's no obvious way to search from the News Plus tab. And the other two tabs are not News Plus. They are the things you get even if you don't subscribe to News Plus.
Yeah. And how is it not a universal app? That's hard to understand.
Well, it is a universal app. It's just and
well,
universal
okay,
apps
but
do
it's
this.
Not. Universal, but it doesn't.
No.
You know?
Universal apps will show different navigation of the screen size. That's why they're universal apps. Is it's the same app adapting its interface to the screen size. That's not so much of the problem. The problem is that the iOS version of the app just doesn't make it clear how to do that at all.
Okay. Well, I will then say the universal app that is. Not universal when you look at it.
not
problematic.
Not, yeah, that does not have easily to understand universal features that are in similar places.
Right. Somebody who has very universal features, Justin Robert Young, thank you for being with us. you're nothing if not consistent. Let folks know where they can keep up with all your work.
Well, you can go ahead and get my free political newsletter at freepoliticalnewsletter.com. 5 days a week, 5 stories a day, mostly gifts, sometimes hot takes.
Check it out, folks, freepoliticalnewsletter.com, and join our Patreon. We are just a couple of days from the end of the month, and we need a round dozen folks to join up in order to have one more subscriber member at Patreon than last month. We always lose a few towards the end of the month because people are looking at their bills, and the majority of the people who are leaving are saying in their exit surveys it's a financial thing. So if you can make it up for them and you want to get Roger's column that comes out on Thursdays, my editor's desk that'll come out Saturday morning, I'm going to be talking about how I correct for my own biases a little bit. All of that is available to members at patreon.com/DTNS. So help us get us over the line to one more patron than last month at patreon.com/DTNS.
If you've got burning feedback for us, our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. If you'd like to join the show live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC is where to put it on your calendar, and find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Rob DeMillo and Len Peralta will be illustrating. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.